NRP S2E46, Artist Rights. This week, Ian and I are talking about, would you say we're talking about artist rights or copyrights or creator's rights? How would you describe it, Ian?
I would say it describes all of those things.
Magical.
Yeah.
So why don't you get started? You know, you're the one who's prepared some notes, and I'll be testing you. There'll be a test at the end, so please show your work.
Yeah, well, I just thought we would sort of generally talk about, you know, like copyright and intellectual property and moral rights. I mean, those things are legally very complicated. So I just thought you would want to talk about those things a little bit. I guess there was one thing I sort of wanted to add in about that we talked in the previous episodes about the DRM. I think one of the points that I was trying to get to that I sort of missed on there is it seems like copyright, the laws on copyright seem like they're too tight, and I was trying to think in my head of what I was trying to think about is do you think that there's like every song that a person makes or a picture that somebody makes on a computer or digitally, anything digitally, do you think that there is a finite value to that? Like if somebody makes a painting, you know, you sell that to somebody, and, you know, they pay you for that, and then that's all you see. I mean, the other people could sell your work and stuff how many ever times that they want, but you don't see any more money from that. You just get what you get, you know? You think there should be a finite price or worth to somebody's artwork, whether it's digitally or traditionally.
So basically you're arguing the whole work for hire, whatever the person pays you to make the work, but you don't own it when you're done with it, is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, I'm not arguing that it should be that. I'm sort of asking of what do you think your ideas of that, because I mean, if I made a 3D model or something, instead of trying to milk it for the rest of eternity, do you think, I mean, I wouldn't mind getting like some large lump sum for that and hand it off to somebody else, as long as I guess I could live off from that and continue on to other work, you know?
Well, I mean, I can see the sides of that, because, you know, we were talking about this before with Superman's creators, you know, Siegel and Shuster. They created Superman, and then they sold the rights because it was the Depression and they had to make money and they had to survive, you know, and it was a good deal for them at the time. And then Superman became this huge thing that DC Comics kind of, you know, suckled off the teat of. And it became a thing, and, you know, the whole comics industry sprung up of people trying to copy this and imitate it. And, you know, all of a sudden they're like, well, hey, we created this. How come we don't, you know, we should be seeing a bit of this? And they didn't, because they didn't own the rights to it. You know, I mean, you could say the same thing with, like, Disney. You know, that anything you create on the premises of the company while you're working at Disney is technically Disney's magic. You know, like Walt Disney, like he, you know, they try to make it as the studio creates a film rather than the people in the studio, because he didn't want to dispel the magic and everything. I mean, no bad talking about the mouse, because I kind of want to work ever again, and they're a good company. Anyone that works for Disney, they either do it for a little bit and move on, or they work it for life. So, you know, good company, good people. But you know, it's all business. It's a lot of business. It's like, you know, if you make a drawing, you know, will this thing that I created ever become, you know, a big popular thing? Well, I mean, this one illustration might not be a thing, but what if you create, you know, this character that gets adapted and gets a big movie deal, and it's like the creator who came up with it isn't seeing a penny of it because he sold his rights? It's like, well, you gotta decide when you make stuff, do you want to be a work for hire and create stuff for other people? And if you're creating stuff, well, maybe you should really pursue the whole, you know, owning your own rights and owning your own thing and trying to go ahead with it. But sometimes that's not for you. Sometimes you just want to work contract work and, like, you know, like work for Marvel and DC, where you've got these characters that they created and you can tell stories with them, but, you know, you're just playing with someone else's toys, basically.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, one thing I like about, like, the patent system where I believe if in order for you to still have some kind of patent on it, you have to, like, keep paying to be able to be recognized as, like, have your invention be recognized as still yours, is you got to pay the patent office or something every so many years. Well, do you think it would be good if everybody had to do that for the copyrights, where if they want to keep milking off of it, they got to pay something for that, you know?
Well, I mean, that's an intimidating thing, though, because what if you're, you know, a creator who doesn't have money, you know, and you make a thing, you should be able to, you know, you don't want it to just become public domain. I mean, that's why copyright, like, I think it exists 75 years after, is it 75 years after a creator's death? I'm not quite sure, because copyright is one of those things that's also being, people trying to revise it and make it better for the public domain, you know, people to get access to things. Because there are books that were written in, like, the 1800s that still aren't in public domain because somebody renews the copyright on it. But,
right. I mean, well, I mean, I'm sure you could work something out if you make so much money, then you have to keep, like, if you could afford to do it, then you would, you know, from your work, you would have to pay a fine or something for it. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot different about patents than versus copyright. So.
Well, patents are interesting in that for a long time, like, Abraham Lincoln had several patents because when he applied for them, you had to have a working model of your invention, and you had to be able to enter it. Like, you had to, it would have to be held in the Library of Congress, I think, held it at the time. But, you know, they don't require now an actual model because there's just not the physical storage space to store models. And also with patents nowadays, like, especially the intelligence community and everything with, you know, the digital age, is there's a lot of patent, you know, vultures, people that they come out and they say, oh, this thing infringes on our patent. We own the patent to, you know, this certain kind of technology. And it's like, well, not really. I mean, that's a very vague thing. But they threaten to sue people and then they get a little, you know, a little hunk of change and move on to the next person. You know, there's a lot of people that are attacking podcasters because they say, oh, we own the patent to recording and streaming audio on the internet. And it's like, well, no, that's very silly. This wouldn't hold up in a court, but the people that they're suing are such small timers that they can't afford to combat these patent pirates or whatever you want to call them. I wouldn't call them pirates, but, you know, these bullies. I think Adam Carolla and Leo Laporte were talking about it because someone was saying, you know, telling Adam Carolla that, hey, we don't, you know, you're violating our patent and we want some money. He's like, screw you guys. So yeah. I'd be watching that one pretty close.
Yeah. Like we said at the end of the last episode about the DRM, there's definitely a lot that needs to be worked out about both probably the patent and copyright systems, you know. Well, but that's not going to be solved tomorrow, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I can see there's a lot of good in things becoming public, you know, and, you know, you could talk about copyleft things, you know, and the variations of common, what is it? What's that term for when they release something partially in the public domain, like
open source?
Well, not open source. Open source is totally free. I'm talking about, like, the ones where there's variations. There's the one where you have to attribute the person and give them credit. You know, like Kevin MacLeod and a couple other, you know, musicians do that.
Royalty free.
Yeah, where they don't charge you, and then you have to have that. Or, you know, there's other variations where you can copy and remix this stuff. But there's no, you can't do it commercially. Like, I know a number of web cartoonists that have their characters on certain licenses like that, so people can do fan art for it, as long as they're not selling that fan art, you know. But, you know, it's interesting. I've seen a lot of people have, you know, big ideas. They're like, oh, I want to have this user, generating content, you know, thing where, like, I've got this idea, see, and then everyone else make stuff for it. They draw comics for it, or they write stories for it, and it's like, That's a big investment. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I think you have to
Creative Commons.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I
think it's Creative Commons. That might be it. That's the word. Yeah, Creative Commons. I mean, there's a lot of copyleft organizations and very anti-copyright that want to release things in a more, you know, free and open. They're like, not free as in money, free as in beer, I think, and that's where the whole, you know, GNU or, you know, GNU or open source and the whole, that whole other argument comes from.
Yeah.
Because I think when things are, when you use open source content to make something, doesn't a part of the licensing mean that you also have to release that thing as an open source? Or at least that section that you used it? Because I think Apple had that problem where they used some open source software in their, you know, for some of their operating system, and they had, and they were delaying on releasing that back into the open source community. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I always think, like, with open source software, I think usually software like Blender, who try to make everybody think that they're, because I mean, I see people on forums complain about Blender because they think they're just trying to, you know, like they're trying to force everybody to use their software by saying they're the best. But I don't know, I think open source competition is pretty good because you end up getting all these open source platforms that, you know, try to compete with each other, and so you end up with a better product, you know?
Well, I'm not crazy about the platforms. I'm crazy about open source giving options, like, so you don't have to buy an expensive program to open a file type. But, you know, I'm all for making standards, you know? Like, you establish a standard that will open in all these other formats. I mean, all these other programs. That's what I like. I don't like the, okay, we've got this dot, you know, special extension that only works in our proprietary thing. That goes back to our DRM argument, so.
Yeah, definitely. But, like I said, that's definitely not going to be solved tomorrow.
Okay, everybody, go home. He's not solving it tomorrow.
Oh, man!
Yeah.
Hey, let's just give up.
No, just everybody give your rights to me. I have everyone's best interest at heart. Smile. Ding! Anyway. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess we could move on to the actual rights that artists do have.
Okay. Or, I know you very specifically wanted to start on photography rights. Am I correct?
Yeah. Since I myself am a photographer, I like to do panoramas and do photography, you know?
Oh, do you call yourself a shutterbug? Is it you're one of those people?
No. Well, no, I'm just casual, you know?
So I picture you in, like, on vacation, you've got the camera around your neck and the Hawaiian shirt and, like, walking around. Oh, boy.
Nah. I always complain to my friend because I have a friend. He always has, like, a camera around his neck, and it's like, he's not really that artistic, I don't think, in my opinion. And it seems like he just does it. It's sort of like a... chain or something. Wears it around his neck just to look
thing,
like yeah.
The thing that's
expensive
so
stuff.
So it's like his beret and his French shirt, you know, like his I'm an artiste, you know. Cause, I mean, I've seen plenty of like my deviant art galleries of people that like they take all kinds of photos like oh see I'm an artist too, and the people leave comments like no it's. And like, oh, that I understand the idea of artful nudity, but you just took some naked pictures. You're not, no, that's not the same. But yeah.
No, I think he just wears it like a necklace, like it's some kind of bling or something all the time. And it's just like
his affectation
to him, you know?
So it's like his affectation. Like I was in college and I knew the guy who always wore a visor cap because he was the visor guy. And you always know. You always know a fedora guy, right? You know,
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of like Bobby Hill running around with magic cards in his pocket. It's kind of my thing. I decided this is going to be my identifying characteristic.
Yeah. So. No, I actually, when I do try to take like panoramas and stuff, I do try to take it seriously. I mean, I don't just have a camera. I bought it. A bunch of lenses, and I've got a bunch of equipment to do it, you know? So I try to take it a little bit serious, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
to, like, to eventually make some money from it, you know.
Well, I know everyone I know who ever gets into, you know, getting a camera and learning to take photos, everyone's like, oh, can you photograph our wedding? Oh, great. Are you going to pay me for it? Maybe I will. So,
yeah.
All right. So,
I guess we could start on this. As a photographer, one of your rights is when you're in public spaces where you are lawfully present, you have the right to photograph anything that is in plain view. So, just anything in public, you know.
Even the police?
Yeah. I believe we'll get to that. When you're on private property, the property owner may set rules about the taking of photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you disobey those rules, you know, they could tell you to get off the property if they want and stop taking pictures. As far as police officers may not generally confiscate or demand to view your photographs or video without a warrant.
Well, I mean, you see a lot of, like, Tumblr people like to reshare news stories about people, like, the cops taking everybody's cell phone and dunking them in water because they don't want you to photograph, and then people standing up with signs, you are allowed to photograph police in action, it's not against the law, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's an interesting argument. I mean, remember the Don't Tase Me Bro guy got filmed on somebody's cell phone, and the police at the time weren't too happy about that?
Yeah. So. No, they weren't. And also, adding to that, police may not delete your photographs or video under any circumstances. Mm. Police officers may legitimately order citizens to cease activities that are truly interfering with legitimate law enforcement operations. So, I mean, if you're, like, on the side of the road and you're not in their way and you're just taking pictures of them and you're not messing with them at all, you know, and they're trying to go about their day or they're trying to make arrest, I mean, you should still be able to do that because you're not in their way, you know?
if you're doing a Rodney King thing where you're filming somebody across the street getting beat, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, as long as we're talking about photography things, this brings up, there have been a lot of, like, I think New York Comic Con was going on a little while ago, and there's been a lot of people sharing things about what to do when people at conventions with cameras get creepy. You know, they, like, guys that go up and you know, there'll be, like, a cosplay girl, and she's, like, an underage girl, and the guy gets his camera really close and takes inappropriate pictures and then runs off. And it's like, you know, conventions have things where they say, alert, you know, staff of this kind of stuff going on, and there are petitions for people, you know, who go around and do interviews with... There's, like, one guy who was doing interviews at a convention, and there's, like, a clip show of him on YouTube of the obscene stuff that he would do to, like, you know, when the models turned their back, he'd, like, pretend to be groping them or sticking his tongue out, you know, doing creep guy things. So, you know, it's like, when you have a camera, it's like, you should be, you know, just like Will Wheaton says when playing games and stuff, don't be a dick. You know, the person you're taking a photo of has a right to be respected, so don't be a creeper.
Yeah, definitely. If you're on public property, you can take pictures of private property as long as you're on the public area, you know, like if you're on a sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if it's visible from the sidewalk, it's fair game.
Then you got to put up a giant curtain.
Yeah. Okay, Area 51. Also, oh, yeah, Area 51. Yeah, you got to be up on the, you can't be on the property, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean... That if you're there on the property of Area 51, I think them taking your camera is the least of your worries, you know.
Yep.
It does say sensitive government buildings, military bases, nuclear facilities can prohibit photography if it is deemed a threat to national security.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, you know, on the one hand, you can understand that, obviously, and then there's other times where it's like, well, what if the guy who's trying to wave that and say don't be a threat to the national safety is just using it to be a dick? So.
Yeah. And it says people can be photographed if they are in public without their consent unless they have secluded themselves and can expect a reasonable degree of privacy. Kids swimming in a fountain is okay. Somebody entering their pin at the ATM not okay.
Well, you know? It's like the paparazzi. It's like, I mean, you know, if anybody just walked around photographing everybody, that's one thing. But the guy who aggressively runs up to a celebrity and tries to ask him questions or wants to get their attention to get them to look at the camera, TMZ style, you know, that's different.
Yeah.
So
here's a couple other people you're allowed to photograph: accident and fire scenes, criminal activities, as long as it's in the public place. Bridges and other infrastructure, transportation facilities, i.e. airports, industrial facilities, Superfund sites, public utilities, residential and commercial buildings, children, celebrities, law enforcement officers.
did you say Superfund sites or Superfund?
Superfund.
Okay, I was going to say, like, Superfund sites, like Disneyland, whee!
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It also says, although security is often given as the reason somebody doesn't want you to take photos, it's rarely valid. Taking a photo of a publicly visible subject does not constitute terrorism, nor does it infringe on a company's trade secrets.
Yeah. I mean, it all depends on if you're being intrusive, really.
Yeah. If you are challenged, you do not have to explain why you are taking the pictures, nor do you have to disclose your identity, except in some cases when questioned by a law enforcement officer. Mm-hmm. Private parties have very limited rights to detain you against your will and can be subject to legal action if they harass you.
For false imprisonment, yeah.
Yeah. If somebody tries to confiscate your camera and or film, you don't have to give it to them. If they take it by force or threaten you, they can be liable for things like theft and coercion. And it says even law enforcement officers need a court order to do any of that type of stuff, you know?
Mm. All right, then.
But I guess I could also talk about what do you do if you're confronted. Be respectful and polite. Use good judgment and don't escalate the situation. If a person becomes combative or difficult, think about calling the police. Threats, detention, and taking of your camera are all grounds for legal or civil actions on your part. Be sure to get the person's name, employer, and what legal grounds they claim for their actions. If you don't want to involve the authorities, go above the person's head to their supervisor or their company public relations department. Call your local TV and radio stations and see if they want to do a story about your civil liberties. I'll put the story on the web yourself if you need to, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, that kind of falls into the whole thing with Chelsea Manning, where, you know, they have whistleblower protection and all their stuff, but they went straight to the news medias, and so it's like, you know, whenever you decide to take action that you feel you've had your rights violated, or you think, you know, you need to go seek legal counsel, it's always best to look into what your legal resources are and where you should go, because, I mean, sometimes the news camera is the best thing to do, sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing, a simple reminder, Ian and I, neither of us are lawyers, we're just commenting on how we understand our rights, and we tell anybody that if you want to follow our advice, to always use your own best judgment and seek a professional before claiming that Ian and Ben sent you to jail.
Yeah.
They told me it was okay to photograph this. They said it right there.
We have a couple links down there, too, you can look at just to verify. And, I mean, just Google it yourself. You'll probably find similar things there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As far as continuing on with rights, we can start to go into the Creator's Bill of Rights for comic book creators.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the first one would be the right to full ownership of what you fully create. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, that idea is basically, like, if you invent some, you know, a world and and characters and whatnot, you should be able to own it and see your own way, and then if you're at a company that you don't like, be able to take it with you. You know, now if you're, like, part of a big team of people that work on something, and you say, hey, wouldn't it be cool if, you shouldn't just go, oh yeah, I own Batman. It's like, yeah. yeah, you've contributed, you know, just like we said, you know, playing with other people's toys, but it's like, if you create something, you know, whole hog, then you should be able to get the ham from it, shall we say.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, I remember hearing something about when we went to the Art Institute where they technically own anything that you make when you're there.
Yeah, well, I mean, some film schools do that, you know, like when their film, a student's film debuts and it's like people want to buy it, and it's like, well, the school owns it because, well, on the one hand, the school did provide the cameras and they did provide, you know, do the instruction and everything, and they fund it because, like, you know, animation films, if you're making an animated film and you know, they provide, you know, people to help teach, you know, to make the music and all the equipment and all that stuff. But, you know, it's like, I don't know, that's a whole matter of ownership, just like the whole Disney thing. Like, if you draw anything while you're at, you know, while you're working for the Disney studios, it's their thing. And I understand that that's, you know, just easier for them. It's like, they want to be able to say, we just own it, so we don't have to ask so-and-so for, because sometimes the, you know, when it's all said and done, it's like, I don't remember who drew this character and who did this one, but it's all, you know, it's the company, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, as far as the Art Institute thing, I think they said also, like, if even if you, like, make an animation or something on your computer and you use it for a demo reel or you use it for some homework or something, that they still own that, too.
Well, I mean, they're not. Here's the thing. It's like, you know, your demo reel helps you get a job. I don't think you're really selling your demo reel, so they don't. They don't really care. I think it's more of like, you know, if something comes big, they want to, like, you know, after you die and they happen to have your film and somebody comes to them looking for an archive, it's like, well, it's just easier that way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if you try to challenge it in a court, though, like, I don't think they would try to go as far as saying that they own a drawing you did on a sketch pad just, like, on your own time, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I have no idea. I mean, I think it's just, like, a promotional thing, like, you know, like what we're talking about with Instagram and all these other things, where it's like, if they have a copy of your work and they want to print it out in a poster and say, come to our institute, and, like, here's a nice big painting somebody did, they don't want to have to, you know, have to clear it with the student, because the student's already paying so much, you know, thousands of dollars to go to school there.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Anyways, the second right is the right to full control over the creative execution of that which we fully own.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to say that in layman's terms what that means? Well, you want to explain that a little bit?
Well, like when Bill Watterson, you know, he got Covenant Hobbes, he created it, became this big thing, and then his syndicate was going, oh, we need to make t-shirts and dolls and a Saturday morning cartoon. He was just like, I'm not comfortable with that. I want this to just be the comic. I don't, you know, and if he was comfortable with pursuing, and some people, they make something and then they put it on everything and that's what they want to do. You know, look at Jim Davis and Paws Inc., you know, when they made, he's got Garfield and it's on everything, and people were breaking into cars to steal the plush doll that was stuck on the windshield of car, you know. Like, Garfield has a bit of a cult following. I've heard of several chapels that keep Garfield costumes on, you know, in stock at the chapel in case people want to get married as Garfield. So, you know, and it's like, if the creator makes something and they want to pursue it a certain way, as long as it's their thing, they should be free to do it how they want. If, you know, if it's somebody else's creation, that's different. And I don't think, you know, other people shouldn't be able to take your idea and your thing and try and make money off of it and sell it.
Right.
I mean, that's a whole issue of with conventions you get with the fan art, you know, community is like, well, a lot of people, you go to a convention and you'll see a lot of people selling like a drawing of Wolverine or Superman and stuff like that. And it's like, that's a great drawing. You work for DC? Well, no, but, well then.
Well, a lot of them do seem to have legitimate talents, though. They should definitely try to draw their own ideas and they could probably succeed, you know?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, if you've ever been to a convention, is people like stuff they know. That's why if you go to a comic convention, you'll see 1,000 things with Doctor Who in them and 1,000 mashups of Star Wars, you know, because that's the draw. It's like, oh, I love Star Wars, and it's, you know, it's like, you as an artist, your thing, I mean, if you have a thing that you have a fan base that you want to, you know, that comes for your stuff, that's one thing. But in a lot of artist alleys and stuff, a lot of artists, you know, they need something to latch, the public to latch onto them being, you know, doing for a while, which I don't know. It kind of gets to a gray area. And I've never really been comfortable with making like, I mean, I'm fine with fan art on like Tumblr of like somebody drawing their favorite character from a thing in their style or whatever. But I kind of draw the line at, you know, stuff you, when you make money from it, like mashups and stuff. I don't know. I always feel kind of weird about them, and I'm a little tired of them, to be honest.
Yeah, I'll agree about that, but I know one of the gray areas as far as like the 3D world is like selling your 3D models. Like if you make a Coke bottle or something like that, I think that should sort of be okay, you know, because you could just use that as like an asset. Whoever wants to buy it, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, no, who owns the copyright to the shape of the Coke bottle? I mean, if you like 3D scan one in, you know, like we were talking about before, that would just be directly copying what exists out there. Just like if you scanned in, you know, for textures, if you scanned in, a fabric or something that had a particular pattern in it, and you weren't altering it or anything, you just went out and got somebody else's thing and copied it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's a whole nother problem in itself, too, is the texturing. One thing I didn't mention about the textures, which is just the fact that you see, like, a lot of these texture sites where they give you the Creative Commons or whatever we said earlier, where you can use it for just whatever you want it, except for commercial use, I guess, you know.
Some places it's commercial use, some places it's you can use it for anything, except don't sell it on, you know, a site for selling textures, because this we gave you this free, and we don't want you making money from our free thing we're giving to people.
Right. But I was just going to say, textures would probably be the hardest thing to challenge in court, because since it's just like a pattern and stuff, there's going to probably be a ton of times where you honestly made a texture and the people thought for some reason that you just copied their texture or something, you know, when you just totally make it. Just the randomness of patterns sometimes can just be generated to be exactly the same pixel for pixel almost, you know.
Well,
you know,
like,
what I'm saying?
Well, like we were saying with the whole YouTube thing, it's like a lot of copyright claims and stuff are just by people that assume they own the thing or they have the ability to flag it as their own thing. So it's like, you know, if you go to make a model of something that is very common that people see everywhere, it's like the person that, you know, the people that own that, like there was that whole thing with the Obama poster and people parodying that, and it's like well, the guy who made that, you know, he got his money from it, and you're kind of stealing from him, and he's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
So that's a whole nother issue.
Yeah, we could go on and on about all this legal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the third one is the right to approval over the reproduction and format of our creative property.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I mean, we were talking before about, you know, when a DVD comes out and then now there's Blu-ray, it's like, well, obviously if you own the content, you want to be able to release it in the, you know, best quality and biggest picture and all these fun things. And if you make something and somebody else is in charge of getting it printed, you know, you can have, I mean, I think Bill Watterson said that he's had some of his stuff recolored and done, you know, things have happened to his work in other places and he didn't care for it, but it was, you know, the syndicate's decision. He, you know, it was either him or Charles Schulz, or, you know, I've heard creators say that their stuff's been resized or relettered, and, you know, they haven't been involved with it, and it's like they don't like that. And if you're in charge of your own work, you know, it depends on what deal you sign. If you sign away the rights, wave them goodbye, because it's very rare for you to get them back. A lot of creators sold or gave away their rights a long time ago, and they spend decades getting them back. You know, I think the guys who make Penny Arcade did that, so.
Yeah. And the fourth one would be the right to approval over the methods by which our creative property is distributed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, now, cause, you know, when they wrote that, computers weren't even a thing, and now there's a huge method of things getting distributed. And it's like, you know, it's a whole nother universe from back when it was all, okay, do you want this printed in a magazine or you don't, or you want this printed in a small trade for a, you know, a small room, or, you know, and now it's like, do you want this on a free ebook? Do you want this on a website? Do you want this print, you know, there's a whole range of rights for rights for creators. I mean, you know, plus when you sell your rights, if you don't give away all of them, you can sell, you know, some of your rights. You know, somebody has the exclusive right to print your stuff, and somebody has the exclusive right to, you know, make merchandise off of or adapt it. You know, we talked about how Marvel, their X-Men property and Spider-Man are owned by other studios, and they'd really like to be able to put X-Men and Spider-Man in the, you know, in the same universe as the Avengers and all these other things. But as long as the other studios make a movie every so often to keep their end of the license up, they can't.
Yeah. The right to free movement of ourselves and our creative property to and from publishers. What do you think about that?
It's an important thing to have. Like, you don't want somebody saying you can't take your creative, you know, thing that you made to another company. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes that, you know, it could be the end of a studio if their, you know, main cash cow decides to leave, and they can threaten all kinds of action, but at the end of the day, whoever owns the rights for it owns the rights.
Yeah, the right to employ legal counsel in any and all business transactions.
Yeah, because if you don't know legalese, you'd like to have somebody who can come in and speak on your behalf.
Yeah. The right to offer a proposal to more than one publisher at a time.
Now see, that's the thing, is like when you sign a movie deal, you know, you can have the first right of refusal. You know, like, you know, when you do sign a deal, you can have things written into the contract where, you know, oh, if you write a sequel to this, even if we hate your film after, like, I think the guy that wrote Crocodile Dundee 3 had that happen where, like, they got in a deal, yeah, where if they submit another, if he wants to do another movie, he has to, I think, what was it? If he wanted to do another movie, they had to have the first rights to say, well, if we want to do it, here's our copy of it, and then he would turn them down, and then they would move on. But, you know, it would be they had the first rights of refusal, and a lot of, you know, and then, or like if you've got a job and you tell your employer, hey, these other people are offering me more money, that you have to give them most of the times they'll say, well, under your contract, you have to give us the option to try and match what they're doing or better than. So,
yeah, I think you talked to Howard Stern about that too. But yeah, it's interesting stuff, man.
Stuff I've never had to deal with, but
yeah. Well, hopefully soon someday you will, you know.
Yeah. Hopefully I won't have to deal with any complaints over it. I'll just have to look at the contract and make sure I'm not getting screwed and sign my name. Or have somebody look it over.
I don't know. I sort of look at it as it's sort of like, yeah, I wish I had the problem of having to, like, juggle, like, multiple women, you know.
Well,
wish I had one woman.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if... You get, you know, a lot of people say, oh, they wish they had the problem of a stalker until they get one. So,
yeah.
All right, back to the Bill of Rights.
The right to prompt payment of a fair and equitable share of profits derived from all of our creative work.
Oh, yeah, this is a big one I see in a lot of freelancing blogs and whatnot, where, you know, business is business, and whenever a company is doing something and dishing out the checks, do not feel bad if you have to get under somebody's skin and say, hey, I need my money or I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. You know, if you agree to get paid half before and half after, that's, you know, that's fine. But people, if you've done the work, you deserve to get paid for it, and you should usually put a kill fee in your contract. So if the project gets canceled, you haven't wasted so much time for nothing.
Right. The right to full and accurate accounting of any and all income and disbursements relative to our work.
That just makes sense. It's like, if money comes in, nobody should be hiding any of it.
Yeah, that's true. The right to prompt and complete return of our artwork in its original condition.
Yeah, I was watching an interview with Scott McCloud about this, and he said, you know, nowadays that doesn't seem like such a thing, but back in the day, you know, like, you know, you submitted your art to something, and then they owned it. It's like Bill Widerson. He said that like at some point he started asking that he just send off to the printers not the original artwork, but like high quality Xeroxes of it, because the originals would get mangled, and, you know, from all the processes and all the shipping they had to do. So, you know, back in the day, this was a thing. Nowadays, since you can just send a digital file, and, you know, even if you work traditionally, you can scan it in yourself and mail it off somewhere. So it's not that big of a deal. But, I mean, some cartoonists, you know, they sell their original art. They make a living off of that. So it's like it's kind of important that whatever they do, they maintain the rights to it and keeping that, you know, as a thing for them to dip into and sell if they have an audience for it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I need to do, is I need to scan in a lot of my portfolio work that was traditional that is getting older, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to try to scan it in as high of a resolution as I can, so I have everything, every dot that I want on there captured.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after you get up to, like, I think, what is it, like 1200 DPI, they say it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So, which is a good thing, I guess. But, I mean, I'm sure in the future when computers are much faster and bigger anyway, it's like, well, we're going to want everything 10 million DPI because, just because.
Yeah, you want to be able to zoom into those atoms.
Well, I mean, there's that old thing about, like, vectorizing things that no matter how big, you know, how big you zoom in. I mean, have you seen that program, Mischief, where you can draw, it's an infinite canvas design, so you can zoom in indefinitely into something, so you can draw a picture of somebody and then zoom into their eyeball and draw another portrait, and then zoom into that and draw another portrait inside that eyeball, you know.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
That's magic.
Yeah. Actually, I saw something on YouTube talking about technology of being able to do video with vectors. That technology is going to come out soon, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, there was that whole time of, you know, polygons, you know, and it's like, you had pixel art, and then, you know, you had that Out of This World video game where the guy had, like, polygon characters, and that's just crazy. And nowadays, we're talking about voxels and crap and all
yeah.
A lot of stuff that, you know, every couple of years, there's something that just blows your mind.
Yep.
Zoom, enhance.
Yeah, I always think about that. I remember I just watched that movie Enemy of the State with Will Smith and Gene Hackman.
Mm-hmm.
And they just sort of did that same thing. Zoom, enhance, zoom, enhance.
Well, they did an episode of Castle where they did that. He's like, hey, let's zoom in and see if we can do anything. And like, oh, it just looks like crap. It's just blurry. Well, that's what happens. There's a low resolution image. And then There was an episode of I think it was the movie for Red Dwarf. They had a thing where, like, what's that reflection in the mirror behind that guy? Zoom and enhance of it. Okay, now flip it upside down. Now look into the reflection inside the reflection of the reflection. And yeah. It was a big parody.
And now make a 3D model from it.
All right, now, well, what was that movie where, like, some killer uploaded a video and they're like, wait, we're calculating the differences between each frame. Oh, wait, it's a song file. What?
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Okay.
I mean, I know there is programs that you can use where if you have multiple pictures that are blurry, you can sort of get extra information from it, but...
Well, I mean, there's, you know, techniques in Photoshop that, like, you know, like FBI teams and everything use that, like, you can always enhance and sharpen an image, but, like, at the end of the day, it's still pixels, so it's like, however sharp you've got the image, you're gonna have to extrapolate from something.
Yeah.
So...
Exactly. Anyways, returning on to the Bill of Rights, we only have two left.
All right.
The right to full control over the licensing of our creative property.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a given, too.
Yep, makes sense.
The right to promote and the right to approval over any and all promotion of ourselves and our creative property. And that's and of course.
so you're saying that whoever decided to have the Calvin peeing on the Chevy logo... You're saying that he really should have had Bill Widerson look at that first?
Yeah.
Well, he said in the big, you know, Ultimate Collection, they had fans email questions, and they would ask him in an interview, and he said, obviously, I underestimated the value of the image of Calvin peeing on things.
Yeah.
All right.
And anyways, now that we've sort of covered the rights of photography and comic books, I figured that maybe we could discuss a little bit about, you know, where the whole idea of internships, where that's sort of going these days, where it's almost turning into slavery almost, because people that go to get an internship for some kind of animation studio or whatever, like a radio place, they go there and they just do menial work instead of actually learning to do anything that's there as far as that industry, you know, instead of trying to learn how to animate a little bit or how to do a sculpture and actually help out with projects, that they're just going to get people coffee or, you know, like organizing things, you know. And I think a lot of people are sort of get in an uproar about this more and more every day, because it's, like I said, it's sort of turning into free labor, you know.
Well, I mean, it's very easy where if you've got, you know, a job and you can find, you know, be able to hire in interns, it's like, well, they only want either course credit or, you know, experience, which, you know, that's a fun thing that, you know, we've had the discussion about places that say, oh, come work for us, we won't pay you, but we'll give you experience.
Yeah, you know, experience in how to make coffee.
Experience or exposure? Well, I mean, an interesting thing is, you know, when there are filmmakers that they say when they started in the industry, they were, you know, the gopher, or they were somebody's personal assistant that would go and get the coffee, and then they ended up running a studio. And sometimes that's a good thing, and other times it's, oh, you just climbed a ladder and you don't know what you're doing up here, do you? So.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it's good when you actually get to help out on projects and you get to take some actual education from it versus just, I guess, just like general learning how to take orders, you know?
Yeah, like if you're the intern on a, you know, at a studio and they let you, you know, run like, you know, color correction on things or do all the, you know, make sure all the scripts are in order, that kind of work I can understand. But sometimes some stuff is just, you know, clean up the shop. It's not, you know, it's just a matter of what they want, what they need.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's the issue of unpaid internships versus, like, you know, a paid one or for college credit. You know, it's like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you get college credits or if you get paid, then that's fine. But, I mean, what we're talking about, isn't that, like, getting education from it? That, isn't that sort of similar to, like, what an apprenticeship is?
Well, I mean, the thing is with an internship, you kind of want to see it as a little bit of a getting a foot in the door. I mean, I could see getting an internship at a place where, like, you don't actually have much creative input, but you get all kinds of contacts. You see how it's done. Like, an apprenticeship, you know, back when, like, Leonardo da Vinci would work, you'd be a 12-year-old boy and your family would, you know, make you an apprentice to some master, you know, whatever, master blacksmith, master painter or sculptor, and you would study under them for years before you would ever do your own thing.
Right.
So, but, I mean, if you're doing an internship for just, like, a year and all you're doing is getting people coffee, you know, it comes back to, like, when we were talking about college and, you know, you could pay for an expensive thing, but are you really getting the best that your money put, or could you have just gone and been a coffee guy at some studio and not had to have been in school and, you know, try and use it for credit and all that stuff, so.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know, it definitely depends on the place, you know. I mean, I don't think, like, if you go to try to be a internship for, like, Time Warner or something like that, I don't know how much you're going to actually learn, you know?
Well, I mean,
because it's not that creative.
Yeah, you might just be working the phone bank, and then, well, I remember Bill Plimpton, he said that, you know, he said that when he first came to New York, he's like, I would have loved to work for, like, you know, Ralph Bakshi, and he's like, I found out, like, you know, after he got here and he was working on stuff, he's like, I found out that he'd had interns, you know, and had people in his studio, and he's like, man, I would have worked for free just to, like, you know, sweep up the place, just to be around that environment. But then again, that was also, you know, at the time when, you know, the industry was kind of in the crap. I don't know.
Yeah. But is there anything you would like to add to that? Any other things that you see where people are sort of getting taken advantage of in any of the creative industries?
Oh, the creative industry, you know, the industry that for creative people, there's always a chance that you're going to be taken advantage of by other people, you know, because artists, a lot of, you know, artists want validation and they want exposure, and a lot of people are looking for their big break, and a lot of people are doing, you know, there's a lot of competition out there, there's a lot of other creatives and everything, and it's very easy for someone to take your stuff and then they make money off of it, or they steal it, or they do, you know, could do all kinds of things. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of Tumblrs and Twitter accounts dedicated to examples of, you know, for exposure, and, you know, and I think that's the name, well, that's, I know that's the name of a Twitter out there. I don't know about the Tumblr, but I've seen one where it's like, you know, oh, here's all these listings on Craigslist for, oh, I need an artist, I can't pay you, but there's exposure, or unpaid internship available for somebody to work on my, you know, music video set, I need somebody to run around and do all the work for me, but I can't pay you. You know, yeah. It's internship is one of those things that people that try and get things for free will just slap on to try and get, you know, be able to, you know, just like there's people that they encourage people to go to art students rather than professionals because they think they can either lowball or get free stuff. You know, yeah. And it's like you have to, you know, have an, you know, a wherewithal and intel, you know, to tell when you're getting taken advantage of, and if you know you can't, then you might want to have an intermediary, an agent, or, you know, have somebody, especially if you're looking at a contract, you always want to have somebody that knows legalese to look at stuff.
So. Right. With all this stuff, you got to know what your rights are and know that you're not going to be taken advantage of, you know?
You got to fight for your right to party. Okay.
Yeah. The only other thing that I could think of to add to that I wanted to mention is you got to really pay attention to your rights when you're selling like 3D models or anything on stock sites. You got to pay attention to the specific license that you choose for that, because some websites you can choose to have different licenses for your asset. Depending on that license, the people could, you know, use it for commercial work, or they can use it for just for
personal use,
you know, like it for personal use. It all depends on the license. Like, there's websites like iStock or Turbo Squid, you know, that you got to really look through all that stuff. And I mean, I'm thinking about selling 3D models on like Turbo Squid and other sites, and I might have like my parents look over it, or have like some kind of agent or something look at, you know, the all the legal stuff on that, you know.
Well, I mean, it's the same with that and with, like, sites that print your stuff, you know, print-on-demand sites, or sites that's, you know, you can run an online store. It's like you always want to look over what exactly it is you're agreeing to, because, you know, like we said with the whole Instagram thing and Facebook and everything, you know, sometimes they want to have the rights so they can use your picture in advertising, you know, oh, come to our site and you can see people selling stuff like these guys. Or you might accidentally be signing something, and suddenly all your stuff is forever in perpetuity, you know, a free thing in somebody's stock room, you know? So,
yeah.
Be careful with what you sign up for, and make sure you understand it before you agree to anything.
Yeah, and some sites will even let you, like, because I'm pretty sure all stock sites where you sell something at, they, you know, they take some kind of cut from that, and you can do some kind of contract with them where they take a less of a cut, and but you can only sell your artwork with them, you can't sell with anybody else, you know?
The exclusivity thing. Yeah, I mean, you can get that same way with like Amazon. If you want to do ebooks through them, I think they have a deal where if you exclusively sell your books through them, or I think it might be only print books, I'm not sure, but you know, a lot exclusivity is one thing, but on the other hand, you know, it depends on how much traffic you're getting. If, like, you sell a little bit and then you realize there's a way to sell a lot at some place, but you've already signed a deal where you can only sell this one thing and you have to give up on it and make a whole new other thing somewhere else, you know, it's an investment. It's something you should really, if you're serious about making it a business, you want to have, you know, your reading glasses on and your yeah. business thinking cap, and then talk to a lawyer if you still don't understand things.
Yeah, so. Well, that's the problem is that, I mean, you could understand all this stuff, but as you're working through your business and day to day, it's going to be hard to remember all that stuff. So, I mean, if you're starting to get really big, you almost have to have some kind of personal lawyer, agent, or something, you know, mm-hmm. to keep track of all of that.
Well, I mean, you know, here's the you know, every person I've heard talk on the matter is when you get big enough to need an agent, that's when you should get one.
Yeah.
It's like, don't spend a whole lot of money up front and then never sell anything or ever make anything and spend all your time worrying about legal. Just like, you know, never be that guy that posts all your stuff on DeviantArt with the huge original character, do not steal, stamp, 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 watermark.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to be that guy. And until you make something and make it worth selling, don't fret too much about it. But be careful about the ways you proceed, because you don't want to end up kicking yourself down later on the road.
Exactly.
The more you know.
Yeah. The more you know. I can't say it any better.
Mm-hmm. Well, was there anything else you wanted to add to this episode, Ian? I think it sounds like we've solved all the world's problems yet again.
I think we have. I don't think we need to fit any other problems in there. Although maybe trying to cure cancer would be nice, you know.
Yeah, well, I'll tell world hunger to wait. So. Okay. Well, that's it for this week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see y'all on the other side.
Peace.
More, visit NoRightsProductions.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/NoRights. And hey, why don't you check out my Tumblr at NoRights.tumblr.com.